Hey guys, this podcast is brought to you by Bet Online. Bet Online is the fastest, easiest, and safest way to bet on all things sports. With March Madness, the Masters, and of course, Major League Baseball opening day right around the corner, Bet Online has all the latest news, scores, and odds to help you win big. The best part? You'll receive a 50% welcome bonus with your first deposit. Head over to betonline.ag and use our promo code BLUEWIRE to receive your free money. This is literally free money. All you have to do, go to betonline.ag, use code BLUEWIRE, and you get a 50% welcome bonus. I don't know what could be possibly better than that. Plus, an added bonus is, if you need an added bonus, signing up for BetOnline with code BLUEWIRE is a great way to support this podcast that you've been listening to maybe for 1 week, 10 weeks, 100 weeks, I don't know. We've done 406 episodes, so it's been a long time. One more time, that's promo code BLUEWIRE, all one word. You can sign up at betonline.ag. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. Let's get on with the show.
We are breaking down all aspects of Yankee baseball. This is the Bronx Pinstripe Show with your hosts, Andrew Rotondi and Scott Reinen. Let's go.
What's up, everyone? Welcome to the Bronx Pinstripe Show, episode 406. Today, we are brought to you by betonline.ag. And spring training is underway. We had some baseball, some live action games on television on Saturday. Yeah. Everyone was just super happy to be watching those Yankee players wearing those pinstripes in the bright sunshine of Florida.
Even Aaron Boone was wearing the uniform. It was full-fledged uni.
He looks like a high school baseball coach who's forced to wear his uniform. He looks for an ex-player. He looks so awkward in the full uniform.
Well, is it because we're not used to seeing him in that, and that's why?
No, he looks uncomfortable. It looks like a guy that's being forced to wear like a three-piece suit, and he just wants to tear it off. He wants to be in warm-up clothes. That is Boone's. He just wants to live in his warm-up gear.
Well, you know what's funny is because when you wear a baseball uniform playing baseball, you're more built to wear that uniform at the time. Like you're more athletic. You feel good about yourself. You're good at baseball. Obviously you're playing it, talking about them as being a professional. Now you're throwing it on as a guy who's like been out of the league for a while, put on some pounds. Like, you know, you stop lifting and then everything just gets a little bit,
Boone's not out of shape,
a little bit more loose.
I'd
say he's got a gut. But the thing is,
he's put on some weight in the midsection. He's not Joe Girardi, who's still just doing forearm curls 24 hours a day.
But that's the point. So when you put that thing back on, you're like, this is not the same. This does not fit the same. This is not, I don't feel the same in this. Now I got to go with some abridged version of this because I can't wear this like I have worn it in the past. So now I feel weird and I got to go with, like, you know, the cutoff sweatshirt, the cutoff hoodie.
Cutoff hoodies and stuff. Yeah, you always get to see that on Old Timers Day at the stadium.
You can tell
which players look uncomfortable and which players still look like they're in playing shape. Like Paul O'Neill, still in playing shape. He looks natural in his uniform. Yeah. Whereas other guys show up, Bernie Williams, not so much.
Bernie's
he's in sit down and play a guitar shape.
Yeah, Bernie's let it go a little bit, but it's okay.
All right, we got a lot to discuss today. Some bad news about injuries because, you know, same shit, different day for the Yankees. But before we do, I'll kick it to you for some housekeeping items.
Yeah, just quickly, the 2020 events for BP Crew events are all on the website. So go ahead and grab those. The first one being obviously March 14th, which is going to be in spring training. That's coming up very quickly. T-shirts are being printed and they will be sent out. Just so you know, if you guys are going, we will be transferring those tickets to you the week before the game. And then also the t-shirts for the spring training game will be available at the stadium. We're actually just sending them down there. We're going to give them out to everybody as you guys get.
That's better because we don't know when people are traveling down.
Exactly. It was going to get
hairy.
You might
be traveling down the week.
Yeah, there were a lot of people that were not local. So I didn't want that to be a problem. So
we want everyone wearing the shirt on the day of. So be prepared to put that t-shirt on.
Yeah, or use it as a sweat rag. We'll see. But at the same time, it gives us an opportunity to say what's up and talk to some more people at the same time when they come in. So May 9th, the Red Sox game. That's a Saturday, May 9th. Saturday, June 13th is the Trenton event that we're going to be doing down at the Trenton Thunder. That one's going to be a ton of fun. Then Friday the 26th and August the 22nd against the Blue Jays. The Friday the 26th, June 26th game is against the Cubs. So that's going to be a big one because they just don't come into town very often. And you don't see them at Yankee Stadium. But yeah, that's it. If you guys are in a different city besides New York, you want to find more Yankee fans like you to watch the games, go to the website. You can go to the very top of our website. There's a little banner that takes you in there. And then we also lost connection for a second there. And now you can send us an email to bpcrew@bronxpinstripes.com. And that will just let us know where you are and you know where you want to get involved. And we will put you in touch with the right people. And that's it from me.
I don't know what you said for the last 25 seconds. So
yeah, no, I heard a beep. On. All of a sudden it started beeping. I was like, what's happening? You're stuck. It's not moving. It's all good. We just move forward. Yeah. That's what we do. But yeah, go do it. And also, guys, if you've been listening to our show for a little while and you haven't given us a 5-star rating or review on iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever the hell you listen, please do us a favor and go do that because, you know, we enjoy reading them. So if you don't like us, then just don't do it.
And did I send you the screenshot of that guy who reviewed and he said he's a diehard White Sox fan but still listens to us? That's a huge compliment. That's one of the best compliments I think we've ever gotten in the reviews.
Yeah, I appreciate that.
Can you imagine listening to another team's podcast if you're not even a fan of that team?
No.
I would never do that.
I would never do that.
Yeah.
No, so, I might listen to like an off episode here and there just to hear train wrecks, like if there was a bad situation.
Off episode or if your team is playing that team for the upcoming week, but I'm not going to tune in week by week. So thank you. Thank you to that White Sox fan who's tuning in week by week. Appreciate you.
White Sox will be pretty good this year.
Yeah, maybe. We'll see. So just quickly also want to plug, I was on a podcast called Big Screen Sports. It's on the Blue Wire Network. So they're a friend of the show. It is obviously a sports movie podcast. And the movie that we reviewed is Pride of the Yankees. It was the 1942 movie about Lou Gehrig. And this was a movie, if you remember when we were doing a little bit of our movie reviews, was always a suggestion to review.
Yeah.
I will just say I'm glad we did not review
it. I'm pretty sure I rejected it every time. I'm like, I really don't want to talk about a movie from 1942.
All right.
And I don't think anybody else wanted to hear about it from our show, personally.
to the Yankees news, which, of course, is going to be bad news because it's the Yankees and we have more injuries. I don't know what to say at this point with the injuries, and I'm talking about Severino, who's shut down. He has a loose body in his pitching elbow. He's sent back to New York. He'll have some tests this week. And it's just one thing after the other. The Paxton back surgery happened, and maybe we overreacted to that. I think I was mostly mad because it was going on all offseason, but I know backs are tricky. And Paxton, if all goes well, will be back in late May or early June. So it's not the end of the world.
But assuming everything goes well and assuming he comes back healthy, right, and assuming there's a lot of assumptions there.
But with Severino, a guy who made three starts total?
Yeah, two or three. Yeah, it was not a lot.
No, it was one at the end of the season and then two postseason starts in the past 12 months. And now he's already shut down again. He was feeling discomfort all the way back in the postseason last year.
Yeah.
So was he ever healed? That's my question.
I don't really understand that. I'm trying to find a ball right now just so I can do this, but I don't have one that's within reach. But the fact that you're a child. The fact that he has the symptoms and he feels it when he's throwing a changeup.
That
is strange because I know you're choking up on the ball more, right? So you're not as loose of a grip. It's a little bit more of a choked up grip where there's probably a little bit more pressure on the ball and you have a grip on the ball rather than just your couple fingers. So I can see, like, if you just do this, if you just make a fist, you can feel it in your forearm more than you do if you just use your two fingers. But it's definitely troublesome because, you know, one, it's an important pitch for him. Like that changeup is one just to mix in every once in a blue moon and just to show it. But the fact that he feels this discomfort when he throws any pitch is, you know, it's the same arm slot. It's the same consistency as the fastball. It's the same thing as a fastball. You're just choking up on the ball a little bit more, the grip is a little bit different, whatever it is. So it's concerning. It for sure is concerning. And, I don't know, man. You don't want to hear anything with the forearm. The forearm is bad news.
Yeah, because that just makes you think elbow, and then you
it's
think
all connected.
Tommy John surgery.
It's all connected, yeah.
And I know Tanaka felt forearm discomfort and never ended up having Tommy John surgery, and that turned out to be the right decision for Tanaka. But yeah, this is bad news, and it's so it's I don't know how you can be a Yankees fan positive about this at this point when it's just one injury after the other. And the rotation went from being such an exciting thing to look forward to this year. Finally, we have some strength in that rotation, and now we're already down 2 out of 5 before the season even gets underway.
Yeah. Look, I'm not going to get too crazy about any of these injuries yet because we don't have any information. We have nothing to look on. We can't even look at games and see like where somebody did something. Like this is just all us.
But all he's doing is throwing bullpen sessions.
I know, that's the thing. That's like for peace of mind, I can't go back to a moment and say, oh yeah, it looks like you heard it there or whatever. Like you just don't even see that, so you don't have that part of it. That's why I'm waiting because there's nothing else to do at this point to see what they come up with in the MRIs. And maybe this is just something that's, he feels it, doesn't necessarily hurt, but he feels it. And he has to just get, work through something like this. If there's no structural issues, we will see. They're obviously going to do more MRIs, going to New York, and we should have more information soon. But it's just not good. The fact that you're going up there and you're going to be getting more tests at this point, because he had the two MRIs in the offseason. He was cleared for spring training. So if this is a problem where they didn't see it in the MRIs or they saw it and they're like, I think we're going to be okay. Now we're back to these issues of looking at what they were doing for the diagnosis and what, how they were reading these images. It's not a good look.
He felt the soreness back in the ALCS. That's why they did the two MRIs in the offseason, just to make sure everything looked good and he could be ready for spring training, and they cleared him.
Right.
So he's ready for spring training. Maybe I'm just holding out hope. He's just not, think about it. He went through all that injury last year. He didn't have the arm strength that he did last year. So his offseason is going to be totally different. Maybe this is a strength thing. And he's just like, oh, my arm feels weird. I'm concerned. I want to get it checked out. But maybe it's just he needs to build back up strength and he needs to get used to pitching consistently again and be ready for a 6-month season.
Yeah, it could be. I'm proud of you for going there. I'm proud of you for going there.
Well, because otherwise I'm going to go to a dark place, and I don't think you or the listeners want to hear.
There's
that.
A lot of
or maybe they do.
Well, and that's what I'm saying. Like, we have no context with this at this point right now because we haven't seen anything yet. So now we're all just like at this point hopeful because there's nowhere else to go. That it's just something small and it's just a blip in the radar, and then it's either a workup thing or it's just something that he feels. Because you know what happens when they feel something. Oh, I felt this. I felt that. I feel this.
It always starts
that.
With just, oh, so I felt this and it was minor. No, and then that's classic Yankees. They downplay the injury and then they give a weird timeline and they just string you along and then boom, he needs surgery.
I mean, I don't think anybody's downplaying this. I think everybody understands that there's a concern here. So it's just a matter of, I hope they oversell it. I hope they said, yeah, we're all very concerned. We're taking this, and then it's nothing. Like, that would be nice. Can we get one of those? Can we get one of the ones that it's actually, it ends up being way less than we expect? Can we get one of those?
The dark place is that they find something wrong with his elbow in the test that he's doing in New York this week, and he needs Tommy John surgery, and it turns out that he doesn't pitch again until the middle of the 2021 season. Like that's worst case scenario.
Yeah, that's worse. At least he's extended. He got his extension out of the way.
I know, right? Since that $40 million contract that he signed, he's made 3 starts.
That's not good. Not good at all. But yeah, man, let's just look. I'm definitely in the camp of optimism at this point because, we're just seeing these guys come out, and it's about to be spring. I can't go to that place yet. I just can't.
At least they discovered it in mid-February instead of mid-March, which is what happened last year.
Right. A lot of positives coming out of you. I like this. Let's keep going. Let's keep it going.
All right. Let's talk about another guy who has yet to really ramp up spring training, and that's Aaron Judge, who was shut down for batting practice in the first week because he felt soreness in his right shoulder. This is not the same shoulder that was injured back in 2017, so I guess that's good news. But this one I'm actually really not concerned about, because he was doing batting practice before spring training even started. So what he even said. So I'll read the quote. The quote from Judge is, "It probably started a couple weeks ago when I first got down here. I've been hitting since early November, working out since early November. Once I got down here hitting on the field, hitting outside, I just felt a little soreness up in the shoulder. Nothing alarming, nothing that I was like, hey, we've really got to check this out. We've got plenty of time going into spring training. Let's take it slow the next couple of days, make sure everything is right, and then go from there." Maybe this is his body just being like, oh, you haven't done this in a little while, so I'm sore.
Yeah.
Take a couple days off, a week off, and then get back to it.
That's the thing. Like, we're going to see injuries in the beginning. And when I say injuries, you know, take that with a very, very grain of salt, because it's not, people are going to get dinged up and sore because they're doing baseball activities, and you can work out all you want in the off season and do whatever the, you know, whatever those types of workouts are, but you're never going to be able to replicate actually going out there and doing the things on the field. And when you do that, your body starts moving in different ways. So there's going to be soreness. I'm not alarmed by this at all. If it becomes something more later, it lingers, then, you know, we can talk about the other side of this. But no, it seems like he's just, you know, ramping up, getting ready.
Yeah, I wish I could know what spring training was like 30, 40 years ago with these guys.
We didn't, we just, if they were banged up or that happened, no,
we just didn't know,
we didn't
about,
know
it.
About it. Nobody knew about it. There's not like the insane amount of people covering the team, and like everybody has to report it everywhere. If like, if you don't read the paper the next morning, you're going to miss it. And chances are there was one guy out there going, hey there, you know, and like they didn't, he's like, oh yeah, your shoulder.
Hey, I didn't see Aaron Judge.
Your shoulder looked
balky
out there. What are we doing here? Like no one's asking that.
But also guys were just like, oh, my shoulder is short. No big deal. I'm just going to continue to take,
they're like, rub some
practice.
Dirt on it.
Inject some steroids in there and I'll get over
Depending on which era you're in, it was, you know, throw some greenies on. You
30 years
it.
Ago, early 90s.
30 years ago was the early 90s. That, see, it doesn't even compute when you say that. But yeah, no, it's, there's a lot of differences in the way that things are happening.
1990, 30 years ago.
Yeah. It's like, yeah, so whatever, you know, again, Judge is fine as of right now, as far as I'm concerned.
So we did see a game over the weekend. Jay Happ started.
Looked good.
Had two clean innings. And everybody knows that the first thing you do in a spring training game is a microcosm of things to come.
Oh, absolutely.
So Jay Happ's going to win the Cy Young this year.
No,
congratulations
no
to Jay Happ.
He looked good. He looked great. He looked good. Didn't seem like the ball was flying out like it had been. Maybe the ball is no longer juiced. A lot of things you could take from that. First.
Well, the wind was blowing in. Kenny made sure to say that the wind was blowing in.
I mean, that's fine.
So that's why a couple of those fly balls. And Clint Frazier had an adventure out in left field. And the first fly ball that was hit to him, the wind really took it. And he had to run
in.
And actually made like a good running catch. And I just imagined like the things going through Frazier's mind at that point. Like, oh, the first ball that's hit to me in spring training, which is probably the game that most people are watching in spring training, is the first one. If this clangs off my glove, I'm never going to hear the end of it.
It's true. He had to catch that ball. You got to set a tone.
That was a clutch catch.
When you're a guy like that and you have like a glaring deficiency that everybody knows about, you got to address that in the very beginning. Like, you can't let that same exact thing creep up on you from the beginning of spring training, especially when you're wearing pinstripes.
Yeah. Yeah. And they played today. They're playing right now, Sunday, as we're recording. And then tomorrow night, on Monday night, Garrett Cole's first start. Gary Sanchez is going to catch him. Stanton and Gardner are also going to play. They said the plan for Cole is just to pitch one inning. That should be exciting. I'm actually looking forward to
it. I mean,
to
just to see him out there on the mound is something important. Like, it was fun watching him in the tunnel, you know, just seeing the movement on some of his pitches and throw to Gary Sanchez. Like, that's exciting. But you go out there and you listen to him talk. The guy seems like he's so grounded and so business. It's like everything is business. Like, he is always looking at, and I didn't know this about him as much. Like, I knew it a little bit after the attention started getting there when, you know, the end of the year and we're starting to like listen to everything he's saying because he could potentially be on the team at free agent. But the fact that he is articulate in like everything that he does and the way he prepares, and it seems like he's talking with a lot of guys, just seems like a very good guy to have in that club.
Do you think differently to him wearing a Boris hat after the World Series, now that we know all the stuff? Because you're saying he's all business,
yeah.
And that was kind of a weird move to 10 minutes after you lost the World Series to be like, oh, I'm already moved on to free agency. But that's what that statement was, him wearing that hat. But do you think that was less of a business statement and more of a anti-Astros, I don't agree with what these guys are doing statement?
No. If you remember, he didn't get used also, so that he was not happy about his usage at the end,
right,
as well. So there were a couple things that happened. It also could have very well been they caught him at the end of, when they got to his locker and he's about to leave and he's not going to wear an Astros hat out. So he just threw the other hat on.
Maybe.
I'm sure we all made too big of a deal out of that. Wearing a Boris hat. There's no way he's returning. I mean, there was no way he was returning anyway. So it was pretty clear that he was not going to go back to the Astros. But yeah, it was more fun that saying it that way.
But before we move on to the dumpster fire that is the Astros and the cheating scandal, anything else that you want to talk about as far as the Yankees go? Montgomery's going to come in the second inning after Cole. That's the plan. And right now, Montgomery's the number four starter.
Yeah. I'm excited to watch Davey Garcia. Like, he's a guy that people are excited about because he very well could have a role. I mean, literally, he could have a role coming out. He could be the number five starter. Could be.
Well, it's a possibility. I want to mentally prepare you if Severino is not ready to start the season. And I know I'm trying to be positive, but come on, you know it's unlikely he's going to be ready for opening day.
Unless he comes back and they say nothing's wrong and he just resumes right now or next week or in the next 2 weeks, then yeah, he's not going to be there for opening day.
No, like next week. He needs to get those tests in New York and they're like, nope, you're fine. And then he needs to fly back to Tampa and then resume right away. And then he'll be ready for opening day. And I just don't see that happening. So I just want to mentally prepare you for the first week or two of the season, the Yankees using an opener.
Yeah, that's fine. I mean, weird things happen in the beginning of the season anyway, so I don't look too much into that. At the same time, you do have some guys down there that can contribute, and I would rather use some of those guys at length rather than messing around with a guy in the beginning of the season as this opener. I actually don't expect them to use the opener out of the gate. Like, that's kind of ridiculous because you have so many fresh arms and you have so many things that you could do, possibilities. Why would you go there?
You have already an extra off day in the first week of the season. So you can go 4-man rotation and everyone pitches on 5 days rest, yeah, in the first 10 days of the season because you have an off day. Because the way they do
build in more
days,
off days in the beginning of the season anyway.
So the opening day is a Thursday at each stadium. So opening day for Yankees in Baltimore is a Thursday. And then when the Yankees come back home, and they always leave that next day open just in case the home opener gets rained out, they have a rescheduled date.
Yes. But they also build around more of the off days in the beginning of the season too, to kind of help that.
That's why the season starts in late March, because that's the players union fought for more off days, yes, in the last collective bargaining agreement. And that's why the season just feels like it's starting so early.
It's more of an acclimation process for these guys to get involved. And then, you know, the thing is that when you start that early, you're coming up north to colder weather. It's not, mm-hmm, a great situation for baseball.
Yeah. Baltimore could still be cold.
Oh, for sure. In, yeah, March, you could absolutely get an extremely cold day. You could get snow. Yeah. You could get a lot of things. You never know, especially with the relatively mild winter I think that we've had. You could get some craziness coming at the end of it.
Was it last year that it snowed at Yankee Stadium on opening day? Or was that two years ago?
I don't think it was last year. I think it was at least 2 years ago. Two or three years, okay, ago, I'd say.
Yeah. All right, so the Astros, I found this tweet by Heyman interesting. He was quoting a player. It's not much fun in that Houston clubhouse right now. One Astros player aptly summed things up. Quote, it's a bleeping mess. Does that make you feel at all better that within that clubhouse we could see it just internally combust? And that could be the Astros just being a dumpster fire this year, because they're not just playing baseball this year.
Right.
They're also dealing with all of this shit everywhere they go. Every ballpark they go to, they're dealing with this shit. Questions from the media, people yelling at them from the stands. Everything is going to be focused on this cheating scandal.
How about the fact that they have their first spring training game and they got Astros personnel going into the stands and literally stealing the signs of the fans who are opposing what happened with the cheating scandal? I mean, you can't get any better than that. I mean, they're literally stealing the physical signs. What an idiot.
The irony is it's
such a great headline.
It should not be lost on anybody.
It should not be, because it's beautiful. It's really beautiful. And so, yeah, petty. You need to take your medicine. That's the only way you can get through this. You can't be petty about it. I'm sorry.
Well, they already had that chance, and they did not take it. That opening press conference on spring training was them not taking
it. But you start doing this, and this continues, it's going to be so much worse. It's going to be so much worse because now the fans are going to see like, oh, really? You're going to like take our stuff. We're paying customers and you're going to come in and because you did something wrong, I'm not allowed to, you know, express the way I feel, you know, in a sign that has no swearing on it or any derogatory statements or anything like that. It's just an opposition view. No, you
because
let that
you do
happen.
You do have jackasses out there who are not expressing things in a good manner. Like Josh Reddick said, he's getting death threats and being harassed by fans on social media.
Yeah, of course you're going to always have the psychopaths that come out there and go the extra limit, but
I think he's saying that to gain some sympathy.
I mean, probably.
But
I wouldn't be surprised if they were happening,
though, if it's one asshole that does that on a normal basis, now it might be 100 assholes doing that.
No, look, does it make me feel better that they have a complete chaos and it seems like it's a train wreck in there? Yeah, it makes me feel a little better. Yeah, it's okay. I want that to happen. I kind of expected that to happen because there's going to be backlash. So, you know, the fact that they're feeling it doesn't make me feel better like for the situation. It's just like, okay, like this is what's supposed to happen. So, yeah, I guess so. I want this season to be a freaking disaster for them. I want them to feel it and hear it every single game. I don't want it to ever go away.
I was going back and forth on that. Do I want to see the Astros just absolutely implode and miss the playoffs because they just, like I said, implode as an organization? Or do I want to see them still be good, which they are a talented team still, and then get trounced in the playoffs by the Yankees? Because that, I think, would be the sweetest revenge.
Yes, it would be. It would be the sweetest revenge, but I still want that to happen along with the train wreck the entire way. I want both of those to happen.
Doesn't it suck that they're not coming to the Bronx until September?
It does, because it's going to be a little played out. Let me tell you this.
Are we even going to care in September? Like, that's the thing.
Probably. I'm sure we'll work up to it. But the thing is, it depends on how they're doing as well.
It's September 21st.
Yo.
They're not getting... One thing they're not arriving until the last week of the regular season.
I was talking with... I was seeing something on social media, and I was talking with some of these guys in a group. That Dodgers group that came to Yankee Stadium... that held the flag up, do you remember, like 4 or 5 years ago, whenever it was, in left field, they had that huge flag, the Dodgers flag.
Yep.
They're going to Anaheim, the Angels Astros game, and they bought 3,000 tickets.
Seriously?
Yes, 3,000 tickets. Dodgers fans going to an Angels Astros game.
That group mobilized.
Just to scream. Just to give it to the Astros. I respect that.
The fact that they could just find 3,000 tickets at like a division rival game, just tells you all you need to know about the Anaheim Angels.
That is true. Yeah. No, it's just
the story is still not going away. I don't know how long we're going to really care about it. So that's why I say the Astros aren't coming to the Bronx until the end of September. On September 21st, we're gonna only care about the playoffs.
Yeah. And they may be in the mix. That may be a contentious
maybe
series.
It's a
because
fighting for home field advantage. Maybe
there could be
maybe
a number of things involved.
For best record.
Yeah. So not only that, we get our first bite at them, and there's a series that matters. So it's gonna be the tensions. Look, you come into the Bronx for the first time after all this bullshit. I don't care when it is. It's gonna be contentious.
And the other part of it is the players, which I think it's died down a little bit since when everyone was reporting in the first week, but the players are still talking about it, and big name players are talking about it. Judge said that he didn't think the MVP award, Altuve's MVP award, or the 2017 really has any meaning anymore. Cody Bellinger had a great quote at his locker. Mike Trout, who I've never heard speak words before, spoke up about this. So it's not just like your Mike Clevengers and Trevor Bowers yelling online about it. It's some of the biggest superstars in the game.
Yeah, no, that Nick
calling bullshit on
Nick
this.
Kirby had a great tweet about that. Just kind of saying exactly what you just said. And I think so all this happened, like we recorded last week on Friday. It started happening over the weekend because guys were coming to the club. They were coming. The reporters were at the, at the lockers, and they were talking to these guys a little bit more. And I have a feeling a lot of these guys said, look, let's get it out of the way. Like all of us, whoever wants to speak up, speak up. I'm sure there was a memo from the Players Association or something along those lines. Like, let's mobilize, do what you got to do, say it now, and then let's move forward. And they all did because they all kind of spoke up at the same time. But I'm glad they did. They should have. And you know, I'm glad that we know now that there is ill will, and there's some feelings that are, you know, that are bad towards these guys, like personal feelings that are out there, and there are grievances that will be aired, I think.
I don't really want to hear the Yankees talk about it much more, though.
I'm fine with it, whatever. If it comes up and somebody asks them, I don't mind anybody talking about it. I don't need them to go after it, but...
What do you think about Stanton's quote that he would have hit 80-plus home runs?
Yeah, he's probably right. A lot of guys probably would have hit 80 home runs if they knew it was coming like that. It's exaggerated, but yeah.
Take the over-under, Giancarlo Stanton this year, 80 games played.
Over.
Okay. That's what he should be worried about. The whole player aspect, though, I find a little... I'll use the hypocritical word. Because there has been articles written that the reason Manfred did not punish the players in this situation is because he couldn't punish the players in this situation. So you have players saying that they are pissed no one received punishment on the Astros. But then on the other hand, you have Tony Clark, who's the Players Association president, being like, well, we would have fought it and gotten these penalties removed.
Yeah, I mean, they wouldn't have been removed because it was literally you could not penalize. It's in the collective bargaining agreement that you cannot penalize for the technology. You can't penalize the players. Look, do you know how many players actually know what's in that CBA? Probably 5%. There's not very many guys that can speak to exactly the details of that CBA and know it. So when you guys are talking about it, they probably didn't know that, you know, that line was in there, that contingency was in there that he couldn't. I didn't know it when I first heard that Manfred didn't use the players or go after the players, or when he used them as, or he gave them immunity for talking. I didn't know in the beginning that was the case. After I knew that, I was like, well, Manfred was pretty screwed in this whole thing. It comes down to the players, he had nothing that he could really do, because even if he aired something out, you couldn't really even impose any sanctions because you literally couldn't. And if you tried,
it has
to
be agreed upon. That's why in the last CBA, they agreed upon the penalties for steroid use. Now in the next CBA, they're going to have to agree upon some sort of penalties for breaking rules.
Yeah, and Clark was talking about that in the sense
which is just crazy that it's come to that. The sentence in the article on The Athletic that was really eye-opening for me was, quote, arguably, if MLB knew how problematic electronic sign stealing would be, not only would it have made sure it had the ability to punish players, but would have done more to stop the problem in the first place. Are you kidding me? They didn't see this? MLB was so blind to the fact that its players might try and bend the rules. They've had a history of 100-plus years of players trying to bend the rules in one form or the other. And now you're going to give them this technology that has never existed in the game before of live video feeds a mere feet from every dugout. And you're like, oh, no, they'll just be responsible and not do anything wrong with it. Are you freaking kidding me?
The problem with
MLB is always one step, if not 10 steps behind the players, and they're cheating.
I mean, honestly, I could argue that about everything, because when you're cheating anytime at anything, you're skirting the system. So yeah, if you're cheating at any point in anything, you are now going around or above or over the rules in some capacity. So I think it's hard for large bodies like this to stay on the forefront of what's going to be cheating. Like, you'd have to put a lot of things into place, and then also have a negotiation with the Players Association saying, well, there's a possibility that they could do this, that, and this. Even though you don't know what you don't know what those exact things are. It's just that I disagree to the point that I think it's a touchy subject to implement or have in place penalties for something that hasn't happened yet.
But you have a rule book. You have rules.
Yeah.
Why then do you have to agree upon penalties for each rule and not just a blanket? You get penalized if you break any number of these.
Because
rules.
I think at that point now you're going to give too much. I think the Players Association would then be giving too much power in what those penalties would be based on whatever the infraction is as well. Because
so you're saying some infractions are more severe, yes, than others. You're right. You're absolutely
and
right.
And if it's not negotiated ahead of time, well, now the owners and the commissioner has a little bit more of a leg to stand on and has more power. And the Players Association does not give up power.
Well, I would just hope that come the next CBA, which is going to be up in 2021, that they do something differently. And maybe instead of having to agree upon line-by-line punishments for each rule, maybe you bucket them and you say, this is a Tier 1 violation, this is a Tier 2 violation, this is a Tier 3 violation, and here are your penalties for Tier 1, Tier 2, Tier 3. Steroids electronic sign stealing, that's a tier one. That's the worst kind of rule you can break, and you're going to get 80 games for that first time offender. Then tier two, I don't know what that rule would be. I don't know what, you know, throw another rule out there that you can no longer violate. Like, there's little petty rules now where, like, you can't slide hard into second base, or you can't hit a guy if you get, you know what I mean? Like, if retaliation, those sorts of things, maybe that's a lower tier and you get the 5 or the 10 games that is agreed upon. But you can't just expect the players to follow the rules when there's actually nothing holding them to it.
It's really difficult to say that. You can't hold the players to a moral compass. You have to go beyond the moral compass.
Have we not learned you cannot hold these professional athletes to a moral compass?
Yes.
Because they have never been able to follow the rules of baseball. Never.
You can't do that. You're dealing with different people now. You're dealing with a very different entity. You're dealing with different things that are happening, a different world, a different landscape of everything. You just can't do that. You can't go out and start saying, okay, well, because I don't trust any of you people, I'm going to put penalties out there for this, that, and this. And I'm going to use my crystal ball and decide how you can cheat. I mean, honestly, you look back at those Brian Roberts contact lenses that I've talked about a number of times. They are ones I'm like, well, why didn't anybody say anything about those?
I forgot you were obsessed with those, with Brian Roberts.
I mean, the contact lenses that can pick up the white of the ball, like, way better, and just, like, heighten your senses so that you can see the ball a
little
better.
It was because he had light sensitivity.
Okay. That's how steroids came into play, too. Like, I got an injury. I tried HGH because I had an injury. I have a blister, so I'm going to use ointment, and now I can spin
rate. Right, this is different tiers of penalties.
But that's my point.
That's
my point
is
that the ways of cheating will progress along with whatever you implement as well, because there will be one more thing. Just like today, I believe
that there's
steroids that are not being tested for, I'm sure, that people are using. I still think
that's... Does that not annoy you? Does that annoy the shit out of you? Because that annoys the shit out of me.
It's
every 20 years, are we just going to have another major cheating scandal?
Yes. Yep.
It's like 20 years ago, it was steroids. And now
we haven't had like
in 2020, it's
before the steroids.
Years, it feels like they're on a 20-year rotation.
Before the steroids, though, it wasn't really like it wasn't like a scandal necessarily.
In the 80s, it was greenies. And a lot of cocaine, and who else knows what they were doing.
Was that really a problem? Was that really a scandal? I don't think so. I think it was just, you know, it wasn't good. There are so many things that you could say if you're going down that road that it does not really help you that much. So
you also had the betting, Pete Rose's betting scandal back then?
I guess. This one's huge. This one and steroids are the two massive ones.
I just find it infuriating when you start reading the details of how powerless baseball was and how obtuse they were about these certain things. And also, I'm not letting the players off the hook. Hey, assholes, stop cheating and just play the game you're paid millions of dollars to play on the up and up. That's what we want. Just play on the up and up.
Yeah, apparently that's a tall task to ask, especially if you're getting influenced by a veteran player.
Carlos Beltran, the godfather, was just making everyone cheat.
Right. I mean,
well, did you hear what Teixeira said? So Teixeira spoke to the New York Post, and he said that they used to, in 2014, when the replay room was implemented, they would use it to figure out signs, and then by word of mouth, they would go to the dugout and say, hey, when this sequence of sign comes down, this is what it's going to be. Let's relay that to the guy at second base, who's then going to relay it to the guy at home plate. And that's what we said. That's what I assumed every team was doing.
I assumed every team was doing that too. I mean, up until forever, like, that was going to be a thing, because that's why they started putting those people in there. The guards, whoever was saying, you know, the league official who was supposed to be monitoring that, that's why they put those in there as well, to try to prevent that. And for these guys from using it in game. But, you know, it's just different that there's not as, it's still not real time.
So Teixeira named three Yankees as the ringleaders of this. Okay. Don't look at the notes.
Okay.
Beltran was one of them.
Yeah.
Can you guess the second one?
What year was this?
2014 and 2015. What Yankee might in that area might cheat? Has the tendency of cheating. A-Rod. Alex Rodriguez. Carlos Beltran, Alex Rodriguez, and Chris Young. We knew Chris Young.
I was going to say, was Euclid on that team?
And Teixeira said that he didn't find it to be very effective because by the time those jabronis figured out the codes, the signs, they were probably obsolete because maybe the pitcher's no longer in the game or maybe they've changed up their sign sequencing by the time they figure it out. And then I can see how that would be obsolete. Maybe you figure it out one game quick enough and it works. But then you're like, well, we didn't figure out until the sixth inning on night two and the starting pitcher's out of the game by the next time I'm coming up. So it's really, in a way, useless. Then Codebreaker comes in and the Astros can figure it out in a matter of two innings. And you're no longer having to wait six innings. You figure out in two innings. And instead of relaying it to guys through word of mouth in the dugout in second base, I'm going to slam on a trash can. I'm going to buzz someone's nipple. I'm going to send a smoke signal out to center field. And now it's real time. And that's where it escalated. It escalated so quickly in what the Astros were doing. And I'm sure the Astros were not the only team that it escalated for. We just haven't heard about it yet.
Yeah.
The Red Sox punishments are coming soon.
I mean, yeah, I guess. But nobody's there to be punished anymore. So who really cares? Because they're not going after...
Oh, yeah. They definitely fired Cora. So that Manfred could be like, yeah, that's the scapegoat on all of this.
Well, they got rid of it because they knew it was going to happen. And
I guarantee you, though, the report is going to come out and it's just going to name Alex Cora a million times. And the Red Sox are going to be like, well, we already fired him.
Well, that's the thing. It doesn't matter. Like the penalty for Alex Cora doesn't matter. I don't know how you could possibly go any more than A.J. Hinch, though. Like if A.J. Hinch is a year, like I think everybody has to be a year.
No, you can't. Yeah, it's going to be a year for Alex Cora.
I don't know how you could possibly go higher than that because that's just saying that A.J. Hinch was not complicit, and he was.
Well, then you're not penalizing the guy in charge. You're penalizing the guy underneath the guy in charge more.
Who was in charge of the ring, whatever. It's
but
dumb.
That's ass backwards.
I understand that. Trust me, that's what I'm saying. That's why this is all a bunch of horse shit.
You're also going to probably get the $5 million fine, which is a drop in the bucket for these billion-dollar organizations. Why is $5 million the top penalty for these organizations worth billions of dollars?
Yeah, I don't
know.
That's
like chump change.
That's
like me being like, hey, Scott, it's like you getting a speeding ticket.
Well, let me ask you a question, because now they're going to be going after, obviously, if they go after Alex Cora, can they fine the Astros again? I don't think so.
No, $5 million is the top penalty.
Yeah, so they already did it.
Current CBA.
They already did it.
No, the Red Sox.
Though. Why would they do the Red Sox? They're going after Cora. It's more for Cora when he was on the Astros.
No, because if they find that Cora was doing something illegal in 2018, then they can. I don't know. Maybe
if they
not.
Find,
maybe
they I
won't
mean, if they're
take
if they
away
find
draft
similar
picks,
things,
maybe they won't.
If they find similar things to what the trash can was while Cora was at Boston, now we got a whole other thing going on because that hasn't come out.
No, I don't think they're. Even if they find that, I don't think they're going to say it.
So now at this point, if Cora is. You know, docked in any way, it's going to be on the Astros when they've already fined them, so it's done.
But so play this out. You're John Henry or you're Jim Crane. Your organization is worth hundreds and hundreds, if not billions of dollars, right? And you know that if your guys are not following the rules, you're going to get fined $5 million.
I know. This is what I was trying to
tell
you.
Are you really going to care?
This is exactly what I was trying to tell you ahead of when we were talking about this for the first time. None of these penalties make a goddamn difference to anybody. You're out of the league.
The money one especially makes no difference.
All of it.
$5 million is like me going into my bedside drawer and finding $1.75 in change and be like, okay, I guess here's the change I got to give up. That is pocket lint change for Jim Crane.
As an organization, it matters nothing. Nothing.
Nothing.
Because you're getting rid of the manager and the GM. Okay. Let's just bring in two more guys that... you know, arguably could do a better job, if not the same job or whatever, you know, does it really hurt them? No, it doesn't.
So how much money would it get for the owners to be like, oh crap, I have to know everything that's going on in my organization because I'm going to get fined $100 million.
Yeah, you got to make it drastic. That's it.
Yeah.
$50 million, $100 million, something that's like a substantial amount of money. Why don't we associate it with like, the biggest, what's the top contract you have on the books? Oh, you have this guy signed for that much. You're able to spend that money. Let's take 75% of that. Boom. Gone.
What if they went back and figured out in the 2017 season, and the World Series run, the organization in extra sales made this amount, and then fine them that amount. You know what I mean?
Maybe like, it's a tax based on your revenue.
Yeah, you have to fine them significantly because $5 million is pointless. It's not even a slap on the wrist.
Yeah, it's a joke. So. I know.
And I just find as we get more information on all of this, and I just see how it happened because the current CBA and what the players are being held to is not strict at all. So I understand why they're going to break the rules, because if you're not really going to face any penalties for breaking the rules, why not break the rules? The worst thing that you have to deal with is the backlash as far as the media and the fans go. And maybe that is bad. Obviously, we said the Astros organization and their clubhouse is not a pretty place to be right now. But they also might get over it by June because they just moved on.
You know, the longer this goes out, the more like I feel like it's you know, we're going to find different reasons to make us understand why they did this. And that's going to piss me off a little bit. But when you're going through, like, if Beltran was the guy that was, you know, the one that was basically coaxing everybody into doing this, like, yeah, you know, like, hit it. Everybody else is doing it. If you're doing that and he's basically saying, I've been on, you know, this team, that team. I've been around forever. Everybody's doing this. If we're not doing it, like, what? They're all doing it.
Yeah, that's why they are not apologetic, because they think they didn't do anything that every team wasn't doing.
They think that.
Even though we have now evidence to show, like Jonathan Lucroy, did you hear his comments?
No. He just got signed by the Red Sox, didn't he?
Yep. So when he showed up to Red Sox camp, he said, everybody in baseball, especially in that division that played against them, we were all aware of the Astros doing those things. It was up to us to outsmart them, which is kind of hard when you have a computer program that breaks signs. We actively change signs. Almost every pitch, we change signs. And then there was an article in ESPN that said the Oakland organization went to Major League Baseball and said, please investigate what the Astros are doing because they're doing something that's extra illegal. And basically, it was ignored.
Right. And that's when you had, I mean, you look at the time frames and that's when you start seeing a lot of the very tight, the doors start closing, the communication tightening up around the Astros.
Right. You couldn't get like Fangraphs and ESPN and all of these outlets that maybe were just wanted to write about a prospect or write about whatever. They couldn't get any
information they needed. Yeah. Right. So usually when that happens, something's going on. But yeah, man, it's just one of those things that
do you think
there will be another thing after this?
Do you think that Manfred should lose his job? Because a lot of people are calling for Manfred's job.
I've honestly come back from my criticism on him a little bit because of the way that the CBA was worded after I found out what he was going up against with the Players Association and how he could actually go about this. I've come off of it a little bit. I think he said some things in the wrong way.
The piece of metal, did that offend you?
No, but I don't get offended very easily either. I think
Do you think the players use that as something to just attack him? Because that's what I felt like players were doing.
Probably.
They were just waiting for him to say one little thing wrong, and then they were just going to pounce. And that was the thing that they happened.
They were in a position where they could do that. So I think that they understood.
Yeah,
they understood they had a window, and they were just going to go after it. So I think that Manfred, Cutter probably handled it a lot better in the way that he talked about this stuff. And I think that the penalty should have they should have been more strict on everything else. Like if you're not going to go after the players, that's one thing and you can't, but I don't think he went after what the teams like he should, but at the same time,
what could he
there's
do?
A conflict because of interest as well. It's a weird situation because he is in the best interest of the team and the owners.
He works for the owners. So he fined them the most money he could find them. He fined them 2 first round draft picks. I don't know what the stipulations were on number of draft picks you could lose, but it's probably in there, written somewhere, and he each suspended them a year. So what do you think that he could have done more, that he should have done more?
Yeah, I mean, you go, based on what he was allowed to do, there wasn't a ton. He could have probably made the more penalties, more sanctions to the team, cleaning some of the people out a little bit more, like forcing the Astros to do things, not giving the Astros the opportunity to fire people to have a little PR boost in the way that they did that, even though they screwed that up. But there were concessions there that were giving Crane an opportunity to try to make it as right as he possibly could. Granted, he completely screwed it all up. Like, it was completely incompetent in the way that it went down, but they were handed, like, here you go. You can fire your guys. I'll agree to that. You can come out and have a press conference and control the narrative. I'll agree to that. But he screwed it all up. But he could have been more, it could have been coming down more with an iron fist from the commissioner's office. And would have shown.
Say it. He had suspended players full well knowing it was going to get thrown out, but he just wanted to make a point.
Yeah.
If he did that, where do you start and end with player suspensions? Because how do you identify really who was involved?
Look,
because Beltran was the player ringleader, but then do you go to just the high profile guys, Correa, Bregman, Altuve? What if secondary guys, Josh Reddick? What if Josh Reddick ended up benefiting the most from this? But no one gives a crap about Josh Reddick.
It doesn't matter. I think if there was evidence that you participated in the scheme, then you had an X penalty. I think that's it.
30 games or something, which would have been thrown out.
You can't judge a player on how he took those pitches and how he, you know, what his success rate was with those pitches. That wouldn't make any justification on a.
This makes the 2021 renegotiation of the CBA that much more interesting, because you have now within the Players Association guys fighting with each other. So they're not even on the same page right now. And then they have to negotiate something with the owners. And that's why Manfred has the job of commissioner. He's apparently a negotiations master. He has negotiated many things in the past. That's why the owners wanted him in there, to renegotiate the CBA in 2021. That's his number one function.
Right. And that's why he knows his job is secure, because he's there for that. So, look, man, the thing is like, you're talking about how the renegotiations have to happen as well. But guess what they're going to be doing? They're going to be reacting to something that's already happened. They're not going to be looking into the future and putting on, possible stipulations for whatever the next thing is. You know, whoever's using Google Glasses to a point where you can't see them, but, you know, they're getting the information. What if they put up some kind of a lens that's reflective off of the brim of the helmet that gives you a perfect angle to see the catcher's signs? I don't know. Come up with the dumbest shit you could possibly think of, and then you have to have a rule for that because someone's going to break something.
I feel like you could crowdsource that.
You could crowdsource the cheating?
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe. It's possible.
Anything, everything. Nothing is too dumb to put in there.
Yeah. So you'd have to add some.
We got a couple mailbag questions from... We got a couple of questions about the David Ortiz quote. So just shout out to Troy and James for submitting your questions, but I'll read his quote. I'm mad at this guy, the pitcher who came out talking about it. Why don't you talk about it during the season when it was going on? Why didn't you say, I don't want to be a part of it? Now you look like a snitch. Why didn't anybody say anything while it was going on? That is David Ortiz talking about Mike Fiers.
Yeah, I think the people were...
This is the most David Ortiz quote of all time.
But there were... First of all, a guy that was named, but not named, but associated, but not associated. But the thing is... people were saying that he was going after Fiers in the way that he disagreed. The way that he said it to me wasn't bad. Mendoza said it. It wasn't like, oh, you shouldn't do it because
Mendoza
it's against the rules.
Mendoza was sad that he came out. Ortiz is saying, Ortiz doesn't like a snitch.
No, Ortiz is calling you a bitch for not doing it in the moment and doing it later. That's all it was. He's like, if you're going to do it, do it at the moment. If you're going to do it then. Don't do it now. He's like, if you're going
to
do it,
that's one thing. When Fiers did it.
Huh?
Fiers went to Detroit after Houston. He didn't say anything while he was in Detroit.
Yeah.
Why did he wait?
Because he got to Oakland and he realized how detrimental it is when you're trying to play them and how wrong it is.
Maybe.
And maybe it was just a topic
when he got to Oakland.
Finally got there.
Maybe when he got to Oakland, guys like Jonathan Lucroy were like, hey, what was going on when you were in Houston?
Yeah, there could be a number of things and why it went down.
And then they were like, oh, you need to talk about this. I just found this quote from Ortiz to be entirely disingenuous, especially because he was on that 2003 anonymous steroid report that ended up being public along with Alex Rodriguez and a bunch of other players. And he absolutely lost his goddamn mind about it.
Yeah, so whatever. Do you really take anything that he says anyway with any kind of realism? Like, the guy just talks. He's a character.
The next mailbag question is from Benjamin Payne from Oklahoma. Let's say Clint plays 155 plus games this year. What would you expect from him offensively? I can see him hitting 275 plus with 35 to 45 homers. I think he's an extremely talented hitter, and with consistent at-bats, I believe he could be a special bat in the lineup.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's got potential to do something. If he's there all the time, you're looking at your projection system, the Zips.
Not high on Clint Frazier.
Yeah, I don't know where those are coming from. I don't know how you get to that point. It's hard to gauge any projections on him, honestly.
Right. Well, it's funny you should ask, because I'm going to have Dan Zaborski on the podcast this week.
Yeah, Dan's
so
awesome.
Stay tuned for that episode. Dan's so much fun to talk to. Yeah. He is the best kind of baseball nerd, in my opinion.
Yeah, yeah.
Because he's so smart, but
he just
has a goofy time talking to you, and you know he'll just go off on tangents. So very much looking forward to talking to Dan. That episode will probably be up on Tuesday, and we'll talk about Frazier. We'll talk about other Zips projections. But what it does project for Clint is 246 plate appearances, 12 home runs, and a 93 WRC plus. That's below league average. And the 12 home runs and that number of plate appearances is a 25 home run pace for a full season. Part of this is the fact that home runs are just on an extremely high rate. So guys are going to hit more home runs. But yeah, they're not high on Frazier, and I think it's because it's been so inconsistent, not only in the majors over the past three seasons, but inconsistent in the minors. We've seen flashes of Clint Frazier looking like a beast at the plate, but then we've also seen flashes of him having no plate discipline and looking lost at the plate. So I don't know. I don't know what Clint Frazier really can be. We think he can be great because we've seen flashes of it, but over 429 major league plate appearances, he has a 100 WRC plus. That is exactly league average.
Yeah, the thing is, again, like I said, it's hard to judge it from, you can lump the numbers together. That's one thing, but they're not consistent numbers. They're not numbers of, playing in one string. I think that with him, he is definitely one of those type of guys where he could get comfortable in a place, and then all of a sudden you start seeing him, open up the numbers a little bit more. I don't think he's hitting 35 to 45 home runs. He's a line drive guy. Like I see him hitting, 25 to 30, maybe if he gets lucky, but 20 to 25 home
runs. But again, how do we know? What's the ball look like? Because Gleyber Torres looks like a 35 home run hitter.
Gleyber Torres also launches the living shit out of the ball too. I mean, like,
he does have a lot, a higher launch angle than Frazier, but I'm just saying, like, it's all dependent on the ball with Frazier,
I guess. You can see power. I like his offense because I think it gives you, more doubles, more gap power. Like, I like him as an offensive player. I like him a lot. You see a guy that, I think he could potentially, cut down his strikeouts a lot with the type of swing that he has. So I do think that he could be a very productive player offensively. And I think we've all been kind of on that page. That's not the problem. The problem is, he's got no position right now with the way that he plays defensively. So until he can show and prove that, he's not a liability in the field, then we're never going to know what he could be offensively.
He's never going to get the consistent at-bats, right? Because he's not consistent in the field.
Does it make sense that he could be an everyday left fielder for the Yankees for a very long time? Yeah, it could be. He slots beautifully in there, honestly, with Gardner, coming to an end if that happens. It could make a lot of sense, but I don't know if the timing's going to work out with his opportunity. I don't know if it's going to seemingly.
It's already taken longer than he ever imagined.
Again, got to show that he can play defense. If he can play defense, then that time may come faster and he may get more opportunities. Obviously, but because I think they like his bat too. I think he needs consistent at bats though.
Yeah. The next question is from Thomas John. Since the story will not go away, which Yankee would see the greatest improvement and who would be the best hitter if they knew every pitch that was coming? I answered this so fast in my mind, it wasn't even funny.
Well, go ahead then. So I don't take it.
Gary Sanchez.
I'm looking at your answer. I was going to steal it from you.
If Gary Sanchez knew every pitch that was coming, I do think he would hit 80 home runs.
Gary Sanchez has one, he would hit fastballs. He would just sit fastball.
He annihilates fastballs.
So if he knows one's coming, then that's a good thing. He doesn't have to think about that sweeping breaking ball off the bottom of the plate. So yeah, if Gary Sanchez knew what was coming, I think that the pure power that he has, that's so raw and natural, he just sits back and crushes balls and barrels them up. I think he would hit a lot of home runs. I also think Stan would do the same thing though too.
Yeah, but
although Stan does have problems with high fastballs occasionally.
Gary Sanchez, I think when we see him look lost at the plate, it's because he's swinging at bad pitches.
Yeah.
That's his number one weakness at the plate. Last season, Gary Sanchez had the highest expected slugging percentage on fastballs, meaning when he swung at fastballs, he was unstoppable.
Yeah. You know, look, you can swing at fastballs and only fastballs and be a very, very good player for your entire career. A-Rod made a living out of it. You listen to anything with like the MLB Network, Eric Burns is on there a lot, and he was talking about it. He sat fastball. He only hit fastball and looked fastball. He said if there was something like a changeup or something that he could adjust to, you know, he put a swing on it. But he looked fastball every single time. And honestly, I would do the exact same thing. You just wait for it. Just sit fastball, make your adjustments
and
on the back
sometimes,
end, and be ready for it.
Sometimes it looks like Gary Sanchez has that approach at the plate. And then he'll go through a week or 2 weeks stretch where he's swinging at every slider in the left-handed batter's box.
I think one of the problems with him is recognition of that pitch. I think if he has a guy that has a tight slider and a similar arm slot to that fastball where it just falls off the table, I think sometimes he has a hard time recognizing it, and that's where he gets into problems, which is kind of crazy because he's a catcher. You'd think that he'd be able to locate arm slot and like different tendencies a little bit more than the next guy, but you know, apparently not.
So Sanchez, Stanton, what about Judge?
I think all of these guys would murder balls if they knew.
I mean, obviously it benefits you. It benefits.
I think Glaber would be up there because Glaber will tee off on something.
Yeah. Glaber, I think that's also the number one thing he should improve on, and I think will improve on as he becomes more of a veteran player, is plate discipline.
Yeah, because, I mean,
he improved that last year. He started swinging at better pitches last year versus 2018, and you saw a more consistent offensive season from him.
Yes. Well, we also saw in 2018, we think you and I are both on the same page with this.
Hip injury.
That hip was lingering all the way through, and I do believe that's the case. So, yeah, I think progression will just get better for him because I think he's a smart baseball player. And I think he makes adjustments, man. He's so talented. It'll be interesting. The other guy that would annihilate balls that are coming down the middle if he knew him is Miguel Andujar. That guy could crush a ball if he knows it's coming too. I mean, again.
I feel like his approach is just swing no matter what, though. But makes contact.
Yeah, but imagine it's like in the zone all the time. You know where it's coming.
Then what? That's not fun for him. He likes swinging it.
You think Ichiro would hit 80 home runs?
According to Ichiro, he could. In batting practice, he could just slug home runs whenever he wanted.
Yeah, if he knows it's coming, take out Babe Ruth. He'd be like the greatest baseball player in the history of the planet.
You mean Barry Bonds on steroids circa 2002 to 2006 or whatever it was?
Yes, that guy.
Yeah.
He was a
final questions from Andrew Campbell. Who do you think will end the season with more at-bats, Giovanni Urshela or Luke Voit? While it appears Voit has less competition at first base, his health last season leaves question marks regarding durability over the length of the season, and while Gio was tagged by Cashman as the front runner for third base, many experts are skeptical of Urshela repeating the breakout season he had last year. Not to mention that Miggy is going to be chomping at the bit to get as many plate appearances he can to show that his big league bat still belongs.
Yeah, I mean, if I'm taking the over-under on who's going to have more, it would be Urshela. Because I think the only reason that Urshela is not going to have more at-bats in that position is because of just like a major fall-off. I think if they see some kind of a major fall-off and Miggy's up there, you know, smashing the ball, giving like relatively decent defense, I think you're going to start seeing more of Miggy there. But, you know, because I think they're going to get Miggy's bat in there one way or another. I don't think it's necessarily going to be because of Urshela not playing.
Yeah. So let's look at it this way. How many days a week do you think Urshela plays, and how many days a week do you think Andujar plays?
I think Urshela is playing 4 to 5 times a week, and I think that Andujar is probably playing like 3 to 4 because they're going to be throwing him in a DH.
So,
you know, if he
Andujar might get a day at third and then a couple days at DH.
I don't think Andujar's getting more than one day at third.
But then what? Then it's like a chicken or the egg thing. How is he ever going to get better at third base if he's playing third base once a week?
Yeah. I mean, maybe they just, I think at that point, if that's the case, then they may just chalk it up. Like, it doesn't matter. It is what it is. We're here for the bat. And we're here for all the great things of the bat. But again, I think if Gio Urshela has a, if we see a major downtick in offense, that could swing the situation a little bit more. Because the glove, I think Gio Urshela obviously is a superior glove, you know, and I think that that's not going away. I think that the offense was the one thing that stood out from him that was, you know, that was one of those outliers that we didn't expect. If he could continue that, if he could build upon that and show similar, then he's pretty much locked over there at third base. Like, he's the everyday third baseman.
Yeah, and Voit and actually, his question was Urshela or Voit, who gets more at-bats?
Yeah, I said...
Not Urshela or...
Right. I said Voit because I think Voit's going to platoon over there, and I think there's probably an injury waiting for Voit somewhere around the corner. And I think Mike Ford actually made a real... I think Mike Ford made real noise last year. I think he made real noise. And I think that they could end up being very similar players.
Voit and Ford,
yeah.
Yeah.
I could see Voit... Ford... doing similar things to what Voit did with more playing time.
And on paper, it looks nice to have that lefty bat.
Yeah, you know, you got to have that lefty bat, right?
Yeah.
Makes everybody feel good.
We're still dying for that left-handed first baseman at Yankee Stadium. We're just dying for that.
I just saw someone posted a picture of Nick Johnson from when they were down at spring training, like in real life. Nice. Like, oh, here's Nick Johnson today. I was like,
is he down there as like a special assistant or whatever?
I hope not. I think he's just probably down there doing something.
Brian Cashman loved Nick Johnson.
I know he did. We all love what Nick Johnson was supposed to be.
He brought Nick Johnson back in 2010 to be the DH.
Nick Johnson was supposed to be the next Don Mattingly. He was the heir. He was the guy he was supposed to be.
After Tino, though.
Right, but the homegrown guy at first base was supposed to be him.
And he did have a couple solid seasons with the Nationals.
Yeah, but that was so out of that, way past, you know, when we were thinking about him in the least bit.
All right, that's it for mailbags. Thanks to you guys for submitting. Do so at bronxpinstripes.com/podcast. I don't know if I'm calling this an out of left field or not, but I have jury duty tomorrow. Do you have any advice for me?
I don't, because I'm knocking on wood, man. I've never even gotten a letter about it. I've never...
Really?
I've delayed it
twice already, and apparently if you delay it three times, they like come knocking at your door.
I have never gotten any kind of correspondence at all ever about jury duty, so I expect it to come in the next week and a half.
Are you registered to vote in the state of Virginia?
Yes.
I don't know how you haven't gotten it then. You've lived there for so long.
Things happen. I don't know.
You're lucky.
When I was in college and like in Norfolk, I moved every year. So who knows if I just like...
So you think maybe there is jury duty for you somewhere? It's just the next person's opening.
It's possible.
Like getting
it's possible that I am cheating as... I am the cheater to their jury duty. I'm always one step ahead.
So do you know how this happened?
I'm always one step ahead.
I got something in the mail from New York State jurors that clearly said this is not a summons for jury duty, but it was a survey.
I got that. Okay? I got that.
So I, in my mind, I was like, oh, they're just seeing who's going to answer this survey and then send you jury duty. So I didn't answer it.
Oh, that's illegal. Illegal. You could be put in jail for that now that you've admitted it. Also on tape.
I lost it in the mail, or the mail lot. I never saw it. I got another one like 3 months later being like, hey, if you don't answer this, you can be brought to jail. So I was like, shit, I guess I have to answer it. And not even 2 weeks after I sent that thing in, I had jury duty.
Yeah, sucker.
So that's exactly what they were doing. I knew what they were doing. I saw through their plan.
And then you kept going on it.
I delayed it twice for one reason or another, and now I have jury duty on Monday.
Well, do your civic duty as a citizen of this country and go do jury duty. And
what if I get put on like some crazy trial? I'm going to want to talk about it on the podcast, and I'm not allowed to.
You can afterwards.
After the case is done.
After you're quarantined.
They quarantine
you? They could. Depending on the...
If it's like a murder trial?
Yeah.
If it's like an OJ...
It could be... Trial? I think usually quarantine is done so that... if it's like a high profile, it's like, then media, the reason you're quarantined is so you don't get influenced by outside factors. You know, people come into
the
dead
process,
fish laying on your doorstep.
You show up and then they interview you to see if you're even qualified to be a juror.
Right.
So I could just give really dumb answers.
Right. Yeah, you could. You could do that. You could go that route. Or you could do what you're supposed to do and just... man up, because you know there's a chance that karma will come bite you in the ass, you know, because people know, karma knows everything, everybody So you're saying
I end up getting brought to trial for something I didn't do, and then maybe there's a bunch of people.
Haven't you seen Seinfeld? The worst ending of all time history?
I have. And speaking of Seinfeld, Curb Your Enthusiasm, there was a funny scene when Larry tries to get out of jury duty and he just says some racist stuff.
Yeah, I mean, that's the key. Like, I think everybody knows that. If you want to get out of jury duty, like, go in there and tell them you're a racist. And they will not put you on the jury. But then you got to do that.
Okay, I'll follow up next week with how that plan went and what I ended up deciding to do. That's it for this episode.
Curb Your Enthusiasm, everyone, by the way, coming in hot this season. It's been good.
It's been hilarious, yeah. And I can't believe they stole our idea about the New Year's
thing. I know. It was pretty funny. Just shows how in sync we are with that guy.
Enjoy Gerrit Cole's first start in spring as a Yankee, and stay tuned this week, either Tuesday or Wednesday. I will have Dan Zaborski from Fangraphs on the pod. Talk to you guys soon.
Hey guys, thanks for listening to the Bronx Pinstripe Show. Make sure you find us on iTunes and subscribe so you can get all new episodes directly onto your phone. If you do like the show, we'd love for you to take a minute and give us a 5-star rating and review in iTunes. It really helps us out and allows us to create more shows. We're on Twitter at Bronx Pinstripes and the same on Facebook. You can always find us there talking Yankee baseball. Thanks again, guys, for your support. Really appreciate it. And go Yankees.